The Darwin Problem. Now let's talk about evolution. Although the official view is that Darwinian evolution is a proven fact, many scholars have concluded that it is simply impossible. And these are not creationists, but grounded scientific researchers with professional credentials. For example, Professor Louis Bonnor, director of research at the French National Center of Scientific Research, said, "Evolutionism is a fairy tale for grown-ups. This theory has helped nothing in the progress of science. It is useless." Wolfgang Smith, a mathematics professor from MIT and Oregon State University, made his position very clear. "Today, the Darwinian theory of evolution stands under attack as never before. A growing number of respectable scientists are defecting from the evolutionist camp. For the most part, these experts have abandoned Darwinism, not on the basis of religious faith or biblical persuasions, but on strictly scientific grounds." Niles Eldredge, a paleontologist from the American Museum of Natural History, discussed the speed with which complex life suddenly appeared on Earth. "Beginning about 600 million years ago, all over the world, at roughly the same time, thick sequences of rocks, barren of any easily detected fossils, are overlain by sediments containing a gorgeous array of shelly invertebrates, trilobites, brachiopods, mollusks. Creationists have made much of this sudden development of a rich and varied fossil record where, just before, there was none. This does pose a fascinating intellectual challenge." J.R. Norman, a zoologist from the British Museum of Natural History, said in 1975 that the geological record has so far provided no evidence as to the origin of the fishes. In 1960, W.E. Swinton, also from the British Museum of Natural History, said, "The evolutionary origin of birds is largely a matter of deduction. There is no fossil evidence of the stages through which the remarkable change from reptile to bird was achieved." Professor Derek Auger, from the Imperial College of London's Department of Geology, wrote in 1976 that, "It must be significant that nearly all the evolutionary stories I learned as a student have now been debunked." The Darwinian crowd has naturally fought vigorously against this opposition, claiming there have been new advances. But in light of all the evidence we've been presenting, along with many other data points, the theory simply doesn't hold up very well. The fossil record consistently shows us one type of creature, which then upgrades into a new, improved, more evolved version over a very short period of time, geologically speaking. There are very few transitional fossils that could support Darwin's original theory. We don't see any examples of fish where the skeleton is half in and half out of the body. We have shellfish and bony fishes with nothing in between. And that's just one of many curious examples. Even in the case of human evolution, there are significant and unsolvable problems. If you remember hearing about the search for a so-called missing link, a transitional species that can explain how human brain size suddenly doubled in a short time, bear in mind that it still hasn't been found. According to Lord Solly Zuckerman, chief scientific advisor to the United Kingdom and a professor of anatomy at the University of Birmingham, "If man evolved from an ape-like creature, he did so without leaving a trace of that evolution in the fossil record. If it's not Darwinian random mutation causing these changes to occur, then what is it?" Two University of Chicago paleontologists, David Raup and James Sepkoski, may have found the answer. Together, they carefully assembled the largest collection of marine fossils ever accomplished, comprising an incredible 3,600 genera of ocean life. In 1982, they first published an article in the journal Science describing four mass extinctions they'd found in the fossil record, as well as a fifth one that was less significant. As they continued to process this data, they faced a perplexing problem. Patterns were increasingly appearing in the fossil record that shouldn't be there. Yet the more research they did, and the harder they tried to get rid of it with the facts, the stronger the pattern became. In 1984, 2 years after they released their initial paper, they came clean, publishing their astonishing results, which still haven't had the effect on the scientific community that they should have. In short, new species were spontaneously appearing in short bursts in the fossil record in a repeating cycle of approximately 26 million years. This pattern extended back some 250 million years out of a total of 542 million years of fossils they cataloged. The story became even more interesting in 2005 when Dr. Richard A. Muller, a physics professor at University of California, Berkeley, and his graduate student, Robert Rode, discovered another cycle of evolution in Raup's and Sepkoski's data. This time, it went all the way back to the beginning of the marine fossil record, some 542 million years ago. Muller and Rode found that every 62 million years, more or less, all life on Earth went through a relatively spontaneous upgrade, transforming the existing species into newer, more evolved forms. In a National Geographic article that same year, Muller said, "I wish I knew what it all meant. I'm betting it will be astronomy, and he's betting it will be something inside of the Earth." In a Daily Galaxy article, originally from 2009, Muller seemed to be closer to winning the bet. As it turns out, astronomers have discovered that our solar system travels in a long, seesawing, wave-like motion, continually moving above and below the galactic plane as it goes along. One complete cycle of up-and-down movement takes approximately 64 million years, suspiciously close to the 62-million-year cycle discovered by Muller and Rode. Obviously, such long-range astronomical calculations could be slightly incorrect, and the real figure for the galactic seesaw could actually be 62 million years. University of Kansas professors Adrian Mellott and Mikhail Medvedev believe this galactic cycle is the answer to the puzzle. The top half of our galaxy faces the Virgo cluster as we shoot through space, and Mellott and Medvedev believe this area should have an increased number of charged particles and cosmic rays, just like we see at the front end of our solar system from galactic dust. Their theory is that every time we rise out of the magnetic fields of the galactic plane and move into the northern area, we get a boost in cosmic ray exposure. This radiation could then lead to more genetic mutations and possibly create new species. That's certainly one possible explanation. But now that we are armed with our breakthrough research into the source field, there may well be other answers that move us even closer. This galactic seesaw theory also doesn't account for the roughly 26 million year cycle that was originally discovered by Raup and Sepkoski. Something else has to be going on here. It does seem very likely that galactic energy fields will be responsible, and in part two, I'll present a new model that neatly explains everything and gives us a solid scientific way to map out these changes. We've already seen how living bacteria and other species, complete with their DNA, could spontaneously emerge from seemingly non-living matter. If DNA can be created out of nowhere, and both Pop and Garayev's research proves that DNA stores and releases light, then why couldn't DNA actually be reprogrammed and rewritten with the right light frequencies? Let's not forget that when Garayev zapped a poisoned rat with the wave information from a healthy pancreas, its devastated pancreas regenerated in only 12 days. Budakovsky found that the hologram of a healthy raspberry plant was all he needed to transform seemingly dead tumor tissue back into a perfectly normal new plant. What we're seeing is that coherent ultraviolet light can carry complex code that directly affects the structure and behavior of DNA, transforming diseased tissue back into full health. Are there any clues that the source code of DNA could indeed be like a jigsaw puzzle that has more than one correct solution when given the right information? Surprisingly, the answer is yes. DNA is a wave structure that can be rearranged. Many spiritually oriented people feel a great affinity with dolphins, and there appears to be much more to that story than most of us ever imagined. In 2000, NOAA scientist Dr. David Busby discovered something truly astonishing. It became very obvious to us that every human chromosome had a corollary chromosome in the dolphin. We've found that the dolphin genome and the human genome basically are the same. It's just that there's a few chromosomal rearrangements that have changed the way the genetic material is put together. This is quite amazing, as humans and dolphins certainly do not look alike. Then in 2004, the BBC News published the work of Dr. David Hausler from the University of California, Santa Cruz, and his team. When Hausler's team compared the DNA codes of human beings, rats, and mice, they found, to their astonishment, that several great stretches of DNA were identical across the three species. Chickens, dogs, and even fish also had almost identical DNA codes to human beings as well, although sea squirt and fruit flies were less similar. Dr. Hausler said, "It absolutely knocked me off my chair. It's extraordinarily exciting to think that there are these elements that weren't noticed by the scientific community before. If the DNA of humans, dolphins, rats, mice, chickens, dogs, and fish are all so similar, and the DNA molecule can absorb and release coherent light, then we get tantalizingly close to the idea that all DNA is ultimately the product of a single wave, which undergoes relatively minor modifications to produce different species. If this is true, then could we change the wave by feeding it new information and actually rearrange one species into another directly at the DNA level? Indeed, if we think back to Dr. Alexander Gallaud's pyramid on Seliger Lake, this appears to have already happened. A variety of seemingly extinct plants began growing in the land surrounding the pyramid. Do we have any other evidence that could verify such a fascinating effect? The answer arrived in 1989, when a major chemical company known as Ciba Geigy patented a process that allowed them to cultivate new and original forms of plants and animals. The process is deceptively simple. They place seeds between two metal plates and run a weak DC current through them for 3 days as they germinate. When they zapped an ordinary fern seed using this process, they were astonished to find that it transformed into a formerly extinct species that had only ever been found in fossils from coal deposits. The extinct fern had 41 chromosomes rather than the expected 36. Furthermore, within 4 years, the original plants mutated into a wide variety of different strains of fern, some of which normally only grew in South Africa. When Ciba Geigy tried the same technique with wheat, they were able to revert it back to a much older and stronger variety from a time before it had been heavily overbred. This wheat could be fully harvested after only 4 to 8 weeks, and the norm is 7 months. This, of course, has marvelous implications for impoverished areas where people suffer from starvation. When they tried it with tulips, they found thorns appearing on their stems, and this appeared to be an original trait that gardeners had long since bred away. The effect didn't just work on plant seeds either. When they tried the same experiments with trout eggs, they found that a much stronger and more disease-resistant trout was formed. Best of all, they tried out the process on 200 million-year-old spores that had been found in a salt deposit 140 meters deep in the ground. Even though nothing else had been able to revive these spores, simply zapping them with the electrostatic field brought them back to life, as if the 200 million years didn't even matter. Unfortunately, this was a chemical company, and a large part of their business depends on agricultural plants being weak and vulnerable, so they require chemical fertilizers. Once Ciba Geigy realized that these plants could put them out of business, they quickly stopped pursuing this new technique. Thankfully, the original papers survived, so this information was not lost. Another weird discovery emerged in National Geographic News from 2009. Scientists from the University of Rennes in France drowned 120 different spiders from three different species in water. They probed the spiders every 2 hours until they appeared to be completely dead, which took 24 hours for the forest species and either 28 or 36 hours for the two marsh species. Once the spiders had apparently died, the scientists left them out to dry so they could be weighed. Amazingly, the spiders' legs began twitching, and they came back to life, with the longest time interval being 2 hours for the marsh species that took 36 hours to die. Of course, the scientists assume this is the result of a coma rather than actual death. But it raises fascinating questions. Life may be far more resilient than we normally give it credit for. Just like we saw in the 34,000-year-old bacteria that reanimated after 2.5 months, or in Garayev's dead seeds from Chernobyl, if you have genetic material that is already fairly close to being alive, even if it is technically dead, a little jumpstart may be all you need to reanimate it. This is obviously a much easier and faster process for the source field to use, rather than creating life out of otherwise inanimate molecules. Life forms that rewrite their own genetic code. If we want to understand this new concept of evolution even further, we must be aware that some species can rearrange their own DNA without the use of any outside electrostatic fields, such as we saw in the Ciba Geigy experiments. As of April 2009, a Rockefeller University study revealed that a parasite known as Trypanosoma brucei, which creates African sleeping sickness, is able to spontaneously rearrange its own DNA so it cannot be defeated by the body's immune system. Amazingly, the parasite is able to dice up and rearrange both strands of its DNA, changing its outer coat so it can continue to avoid being detected. Though the scientists involved in this study suspected the parasite was doing this as early as 2007, they didn't find the proof until 2009. According to their press release, adapted for Science Daily, this suggested a common mechanism by which parasites and humans rearrange their DNA. It was unbelievable, Dr. Oliver Dreesen says. One experiment after another, and it just worked. These scientists were apparently unaware of a similar effect that was discovered by Dr. Robert Pruitt, a geneticist with Purdue University, in 2005. Pruitt and his associates were studying a mustard-like plant called Arabidopsis, which is commonly used in laboratory experiments. Specifically, they were exploring a mutation in one of the genes that made the flowers clump together in an odd, misshapen way. What they found was that even when the plants inherited this mutation from both of their parents, over a 3-year period of study, fully 10% of them reverted back to normal. They rewrote their own DNA and fixed the mutation. The startled scientists examined the plant's DNA and confirmed that it had been transformed back into its original healthy form. This is a spontaneous DNA rewrite to fix a mutation, and it deals another critical blow to the Darwinian model. If DNA has an underlying wave component that can correct mutations, Darwin may have just lost his job. According to Dr. Elliot Meyerowitz, a plant geneticist from the California Institute of Technology, Pruitt's finding looks like a marvelous discovery. I also like this study because it proves that no giant industrial company can ever create true Terminator seeds that will always destroy themselves after a single generation. Nature always finds a way to repair the damage. Another example of marvelous genetic repairs comes from Francis Hitching's 1982 book, The Neck of the Giraffe, Where Darwin Went Wrong. Hitching reported on his experiments with the fruit fly, technically known as Drosophila, which is one of the most common living organisms studied in biology experiments. Even though various scientists have used radiation to try to dramatically speed up the rate of mutation, fruit flies refuse to become anything but fruit flies under any circumstances yet devised. Even more interestingly, when Hitching took away all the genetic codes from both sets of parents that would build eyes for the fruit fly, they nonetheless regrew their eyes in roughly 5 generations. According to Hitching, somehow, the genetic code had a built-in repair mechanism that re-established the missing genes. Of course, that makes us ask a much deeper question. What is the genetic code? More and more, we are seeing evidence of a guiding intelligence that can somehow modify the genetic code in ways that will benefit the organism.